I was never that high on Lucas Duda. Look, he hit 27 home runs. That's obviously a great year. But I think if his upside is the 250 average that he showed in 2014, that there's a decent chance he's more of a 230s guy. And while that's less harmful these days than it has been in years prior, he just has an off year with the power. He's worth, his value is almost nothing, right? Like if he's a 18 home run guy, where is he on this list? Look, he's a huge guy with a leverage swing and he hits the ball really far. So do I think his power is pretty bankable? Yeah. Do I think he's someone who would take one of the biggest steps back if something went wrong in that department? Absolutely.
Episode 63 of There Is No Offseason, Baseball Prospectus' fantasy podcast focused solely on Dynasty and Keeper League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined, as always, by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Are you ready to talk about some lists?
Oh, yeah.
I've never not been ready.
Rank how many lists you'd like to speak about today.
Right, I'm gonna rank one, but I don't think I'm gonna be right.
Probably not. Okay, so last time on Tino, we said we were going to do current events and get through the catcher and first base lists. As always, the last thing on our agenda gets cut off because we talk forever. This time around, we say we're going to talk about first base and second base rankings. But to make sure we actually talk about those two, I'm also going to include third base rankings so that can be the one we cut. Thankfully, this is a show that Brett will largely get to host, which is a good thing because I'm currently dying and Craig's voice is grating. So Brett, here are the keys and let's go over your first base dynasty rankings.
All right. So this this went up a couple weeks ago at BP and the commenters had enough fun with it that it is now a beacon of being mad online. so let's talk about Paul Goldschmidt at the top. We know that right now he is one of the most valuable players in fantasy. But how much separation is there for you, Craig, between him and Anthony Rizzo, given Rizzo's relative youth and on the surface, somewhat similar skill set for a first baseman?
I don't really know how to qualify it as like how much distance there is. I like 8 units. Is that going to get us somewhere? I don't know how much space we're putting between other guys on this list. I think there's at least as much of a gap in dynasty value between Goldschmidt and Rizzo and the next guy. And for you, that next guy is Jose Abreu. Does that maybe answer the question? It's just a little bit of an abstract thing, so it's a little hard to say.
Let's make it less abstract then. If there's an initial dynasty draft right now, the number of spots between where Paul Goldschmidt goes and where Anthony Rizzo goes for you?
Twelve.
Okay.
Something like that. I think, you know, and that's not a shot at Rizzo in any capacity. Rizzo had a phenomenal season and it was coming off of a phenomenal season. So I don't think there's any doubts about Rizzo now, but Goldschmidt is in another tier. I mean, he had 40 or so points of average on Rizzo. That's a huge deal. So, you know, if all else equal, and it's not exactly because Goldschmidt also walks more, but all else equal, that type of batting average gap is pretty significant, especially as like league average continues to decline, or even if it stagnates at this lower level that it's declined to. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, and he also steals more.
Although Rizzo had 17 last year, so not as big of a gap. But yes, that's true.
Historically, yes. Last year, less so. But because my guess is I would peg Goldschmidt for at about 8 to 10 more steals than Rizzo going forward.
Okay, so I kind of just hazarded a guess, but what for you? How many picks between the two of them?
I think that's actually a pretty good number. My number might be, I was thinking somewhere between 12 and 15.
Okay, yeah. I can totally buy into that. It was kind of, you know, it was off the top of my head.
Yeah. So we don't talk, you know, cross-positionally, mostly because it's list time and, you know, we can't, you know, go against the sanctity of the list. But Where is Goldschmidt overall for you guys in Dynasty? Is he third behind Harper and Trout, or is he behind Correa at this point? Ben?
I would probably take Correa first, but I would need to really think about it for a while. I think that's a bit of a coin toss for me.
Craig, you have any strong thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's something that, as close as it might be, there's not a huge gap, and yet I would take Correa pretty decisively. You're talking about 7 years and a much lighter position traditionally, and I think over a full season, Correa probably steals more bases. It's going to be lighter on the average, which I just hammered on. But I think Correa is a 30 homer bat at shortstop. I think he's going to hit for a fine average, maybe not 300 or over like Goldschmidt does. But given the positional difference, I just think that's a really big gap to overcome for even Paul Goldschmidt. But I do think that probably the gap between Correa and Goldschmidt is, I mean, I don't know what, like a third the size of Goldschmidt and the next person down, something like that. In a pure dynasty. Like, I have Correa solidly ahead, but it's also pretty close. I don't know if that can work.
It does. The thing about Goldschmidt is that he's, I mean, one of the safest fantasy assets you could imagine. It's just bankable with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I also think that at 20, he'll be 29 next year or 28 next year.
28 is he doesn't turn 29 until September. So
right, okay, right. So 28. I mean, I also think I think he's someone who will age very well. Like, I don't think he's going to have a ton of wear and tear on his body. I'm sure the stolen bases will decline, but I don't think he's necessarily someone who's going to peak at, you know, he's in his prime right now, but I don't think his prime experiences a steep drop off at 32 or 33.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So he's comfortably, if he's behind Correa for both of you, he's comfortably number four on that list?
Yeah, I mean, number five? Like, probably Kershaw?
McCutcheon, maybe?
Either Kershaw or Correa, or Machado, probably.
Yeah, I'd say it's those two. I might have to think about Machado, but the health issues with Machado are I'd probably take Goldschmidt's security over Machado's upside, but I do think you could make that case, I guess, so which contradicts what I said about the gap, but I would have Goldschmidt four, and then probably Correa and Machado, Kershaw and Machado a little further back.
Sounds good. So let's go a little further down on this list. Let's look at, well, do either of you guys want to talk about either Jose Abreu or Miguel Cabrera? Is there much interesting to say about them? They're they feel relatively self-explanatory here.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to shed light on them that people don't already know.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So let's go to number five and number six on this list. Number five is Joey Votto, and number six is Eric Hosmer. So it seemed as though I got some pushback on ranking Hosmer at number six here. And we've talked about Eric Hosmer a lot over the course of this show. Craig, where are you at on Hosmer right now? Do you think that this is an appropriate spot for him, or do you think this is slightly too optimistic?
I think it's a little optimistic. He doesn't run like he used to, or I should say he hasn't run like he used to. Obviously, a 297 average is a big deal, but he doesn't kind of do anything like insanely well. I don't see him being necessarily a 297 guy again. I think he can be, but it's not something I would be banking on. He doesn't get to 20 homers. He doesn't steal a ton of bases. I think his fantasy value last year was lifted by runs and RBIs, which, you know, the Royals had a very good lineup, and that's not changing appreciably this year. But I don't know if I would count on anything in the upper 90s for runs or over 90 for RBI necessarily. And so without those, I think he can go. I mean, I think ultimately this is Hosmer at six. I would have Votto five, and Hosmer at six is kind of the start of a larger block of guys. And if you want to have him at the top of that, I guess that's fine. But I wouldn't necessarily feel great about that, because he's not giving me anything that's particularly bankable. Like if I went with Edwin Encarnacion, like I feel pretty good about 30 homers. But Hosmer he's across the board good, but I don't think that pushes him to the top of this tier for me. Ben, is that out of line, or do you feel differently?
No, I mean, as a podcast, I know we've always been high on Hosmer. I guess I'm a little more optimistic about him going forward. He's still only 26. I know. Yeah. Still only 26. I don't think the power from last year is a mirage. I still think he has the ability to transform into someone who challenges for 20 homers routinely. I agree that it's disappointing he doesn't run as much as he used to. I also agree on the run and RBI totals. I think they'll be good, but you can't bank on them being that high again. Craig, sort of what you said, honestly, from Hosmer all the way down to like Brandon Belt, probably with the exception of AJ Reed, who I think is ranked a little too high, this is all sort of one tier, and who you prefer really is based on your timetable, whether or not you need power. So I think you're right in that Hosmer, Fielder, Encarnacion, Freeman, Pujols, Gonzalez, Belt. To me, that's a big jumble of like decent, not amazing first baseman.
Yeah, I absolutely get that. One last note on Hosmer. I like to check back in on this debate every once in a while, just because it was such a hotly contested debate at the time when they both came up. But who would you rather have in a dynasty league right now, Hosmer or Freddie Freeman? Craig.
Oh God, make Ben. Can Ben go first?
Ben.
Because it's so close, I'd rather go with the opinion that will piss people off, and I'll go Hosmer. I get that Freeman is the safer choice, but I don't think we can overlook how absolutely awful the Braves are poised to be for a year or two. And in that year or two, Hosmer is poised to be part of a very good team. So in a completely neutral setting, I might be a little more inclined to take Freeman, but it's close enough that given their contextual factors and given what I still see as Hosmer's upside, I'll slightly take Hosmer, although they should go within like five picks of each other in a draft.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think given that the gap closed between them a little bit last year, although if you go by WRC+, Freeman still had a better year despite missing time. He was 133 to Hosmer's 125. I do think that contextual factors matter, as Ben said, and I still think Hosmer has maybe another half gear to a full gear to him that I think Freeman pretty much is what he is at this point. That said, I also think there's a little lower floor for Hosmer than there is for Freeman.
Yeah, for sure.
Just base talent. But I do think, like you said, those contextual factors kind of push that floor further up for Hosmer at this point. So I'd probably go Hosmer now. But I don't even know if they should be five picks from each other so much as like back to back. I don't think there's very much separating them at all.
Sounds good. But Ben, you hinted at this, but let's talk about AJ Reed. You said that my ranking was a little aggressive for you. So how many spots aggressive for you was this ranking? He came in at number 10 on this list for me.
Yeah, I'd be more likely to have him right before or after Lucas Duda, probably. I'd have him after this tier that we're speaking about. I would certainly take Aegon or Belt over him, and that wouldn't be that difficult of a decision for me. So 4 to 5 spots too high.
Craig, same question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's around there. I think you could defend taking him over some of these other guys, but like a Pujols, just based on youth, if you're in the contention, you know, where you are in your contention cycle, or if you really want to make an upside argument over someone like Belt. But you're higher on Reed than I've been. You're higher on most first base guys than I am. So it doesn't surprise me, but I do think it's a little aggressive. I mean, I think this is, you know, and they're not the same player at all. So I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. But, you know, a few years ago, I think this is probably where you'd have someone like Jonathan Singleton, who looked great and looked ready to be the next first base guy, and there wasn't that much in his way and all of that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, Reed had a unbelievable year, and I know the in-person looks have for the most part backed up that year in terms of production, and he's a very good prospect, but you know, this just seems aggressive to me, in that he's spent limited time in the upper minors, and you know, I just think there's a lot that could go wrong, and the risk on first base prospects is pretty substantial.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I mean, my one, I agree that I do like Reed generally more than you do.
Mm-hmm.
But my argument is also position. It's position based, in that first base is extremely deep with a lot of non superstar options, and when that's the case, I would want to take the guy who might be a superstar, who I think has a pretty safe floor of being like a... I think the odds of him turning into someone like Lucas Duda or Carlos Santana is pretty good. And the ceiling is higher than that. And while you guys were talking before, I actually went back to my 2014 rankings, because I was curious to see where Jonathan Singleton was, and Singleton was ranked 20th.
Okay.
20th among first basemen. So not as high as Reed, but it's a fair point. I mean, Jonathan Singleton was going to be a really good first baseman. I'm looking at what he did at the time. He was coming off what year was he coming off? My thing just crashed. That was the year before he debuted. His 2013 minor league stats, 230, 351, 401. It was it was the year before he was really good in Double A.
Right. Yeah.
He
was 20 in Double A, and 284, OPS. 396, 497.
Yep. All right. So that 20 is a little, that 20th
it's
ranked
deflated a little
deceiving, because that accounted for his down value in 2013 a little bit. But yeah, the point still stands. There are certainly no shortage of first base products who look like they were going to be really good, who ended up not being that great. And you know, I like that we're just completely burying Jonathan Singleton, and he's still not going to be 25 until the end of 2016. Don't bury Jonathan Singleton, but that is the ultimate downside here. So let's talk a little bit about the next group of guys. This tier that starts with Pujols and ends with Ryan Zimmerman. Ben, who is someone on this list who you would be really concerned about as a fantasy owner, someone who could really take a step back from where they are?
From the Pujols to Zimmerman tier?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Well, yep. Zimmerman jumps to mind just because I'm not sure how often he'll be on the field. I'll also say Carlos Santana, who apparently can't hit for average at all anymore. Not that he was ever really great there, but 231 each of the last 2 years. Homers fell from 27 to 19 last year. I know he's not super old, but he is going to be 30 this year, and that makes me feel really old. But I don't know, a lot of going backwards in terms of fantasy value for Carlos Santana between the loss of better positional eligibility, and now average has gone down. Power took a big step back last year, so I don't think this is an insane ranking for him. But if I were taking him as my primary first baseman, I'd be a little uneasy.
Yep, I mean, I think that makes sense. For me, I think it's someone. I was never that high on Lucas Duda. I remember arguing about him in the first base rankings last year, and I don't. He hit 27 home runs. That's obviously a great year. But I think if his upside is the 250 average that he showed in 2014, that there's a decent chance he's more of a 230s guy. And while that's less harmful these days than it has been in years prior, I guess I think, you know, if he just has an off year with the power, he's worth. His value is almost nothing, right? Like if he's a 18 home run guy, where is he on this list?
He's probably pushing 30.
Yeah, and so do I think his power is pretty? Look, he's a huge guy with a leverage swing, and he hits the ball really far. So do I think his power is pretty bankable? Yeah. Do I think he's someone who would take one of the biggest steps back if something went wrong in that department? Absolutely.
I think, you know, to an extent, I think most of this tier is pretty risky, at least when you look at it against this type of tier at some other positions, and especially considering it's supposed to be first base, it's supposed to be relatively safe production. We haven't seen a ton of relatively safe production out of Brandon Belt, even though he's, you know, been pretty solid when he's been playing. Duda is extraordinarily streaky. Kendrys Morales, nobody wanted to touch him coming into the season, and now he is a clear top 20 option. Evan Gattis lost all of his eligibility, and Ryan Zimmerman has a really, really hard time staying healthy. So it's a tier full of pitfalls, and
I think given that, like, that exactly what you're talking about is probably why I, of the guys in this tier, like Adrian Gonzalez is the guy I'd probably go with, just because he's seemingly as consistent as anyone could be, you know?
Absolutely. And that's definitely the argument for Gonzalez. It's his consistency. Cause I think we've seen the last of his superstar level seasons, but that doesn't make him unvaluable. That makes him just a different type of valuable.
Yeah.
So there were when we were discussing this list, actually, at the, when we were discussing this list at TDG, there was a big debate among the rankers there about where David Ortiz should place on a list like this, knowing that he's retiring after 2016. So what would you think a type of prospect you could get for David Ortiz right now would be in a 16 team dynasty league?
You better be asking Ben. This is not my forte.
What type of prospect could I get for Ortiz? Someone in the 60 to 80 range on a top 100, maybe a little bit better than that. But I really do think that I think it's going to be one of those situations where because of the 1 year value, even if he deserves to go for a higher pick than that, I don't think people are going to give it up, if that makes sense. It just strikes me as one of those rock in a hard place. If I had Ortiz, I might be asking for a top 40, but I really wouldn't expect to get it.
Okay. So, Craig, would you trade David Ortiz for Jacob Nottingham?
I'm the person who has Ortiz?
Yes, you're the person who has Ortiz.
This hypothetical is almost impossible, because if I'm contending, then no, I don't think I would. If I'm not contending, I think that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the trick about Ortiz, is that he's a fairly huge impact guy if you're in a race, but if you're not, you know, the guaranteed deadline in terms of value dropping to zero is kind of it's just an anchor to his value a little bit, because I mean, obviously to your team, but teams also know you have nothing to leverage except potential other competitors.
Well, that's true, but that's only half the point, right? If you had him and you knew you were shopping him and someone offered you not Jacob Nottingham, would you just take the offer, or would you wait for better offers to come in?
I mean, my answer is I always wait for better offers. But, like, I very rarely take the first – you know, I will see – I don't think Jacob Nottingham is so good that I have to say yes, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I think that's a fine trade.
Yeah, I get – because – I guess, Brett, are we trying to find the cutoff of player where we just say yes? Because I don't know really exactly how we're going to do that.
Yeah. Why not? No, clearly if you have Ortiz and you are not a contending team, you are going to trade him. And everybody knows that. But the question is, what is the type of value that would make you trade him before the season rather than rolling the dice going into the season to see if someone has an injury or someone that has a first baseman that just absolutely sucks? There has to be that sort of cutoff. Would you if the best offer you got this offseason for David Ortiz was Dom Smith, would you make that trade?
No.
Okay, so then there is a line. If the best offer you got for him was Harold Ramirez.
Closer, but no.
Okay.
Yeah, I still wouldn't do that.
How about Trent Clark?
No.
How about Anderson Espinoza?
Yeah, I think I would.
I might play coy for a few days and aggressively shop, but I'd probably ultimately pull the trigger on that.
Okay. Now, I know we'd have these people rank differently on our individual top 100 fantasy ranking list, but the way this worked out as reading up mine is that you're essentially holding out for a top 60 prospect.
Oh, well, I nailed it then.
Yeah.
Go me.
So we've proved it out.
But I also think based on what the reaction was to your ranking here and some public stuff I've seen, I think we are a little higher on Ortiz than other places or people.
Mm-hmm.
So I just say that to acknowledge that, not to make a point or anything, just to acknowledge that, you know, there's a lot of room for disagreement here, I think, reasonable disagreement.
Absolutely.
So.
And but you know, the disagreement really doesn't have that much to do with Ortiz, because I think everyone, I don't think you're going to find someone who thinks that Ortiz is going to suck this year.
It's just risk tolerance, right? Like,
yeah, it is. So that's enough. That's enough Ortiz. The next tier of guys ranges from Josh Bell down to CJ Cron. If you could pick one player on this list who you think would comfortably be a top 20 player next year, or has the potential to be a comfortably top 20 player next year, who would it be, Craig?
Of these guys, it's a little bit of a cop out because he's ranked 20. I don't know what to make of Josh Bell. I know he's not much of anything on defense, really, either in the outfield or at first base, and that doesn't really matter for fantasy. But he had a great year last year, and I feel like it didn't get a ton of attention, and I feel like there are still questions on him, just in general, and I don't know that they're unfair. But as a switch hitter, maybe without the thump that you would normally want out of a first baseman, because he only had 7 home runs between double and triple A last year, but he still slugged 446 between the two levels. He slugged 500 at triple A as a 22-year-old. I mean, this is someone who, when he came out of high school, he got a $5 million bonus in the second. He was either first pick of the second round or something like that. And he got a $5 million bonus because of his, well, partially because of his commitment to college. He had asked not to be drafted, but because he had such a sweet swing with power from both sides of the plate. And, you know, that might not have manifested itself in home run power last year, but he still hit for plenty of extra bases. And as someone who has a good swing from both sides of the plate, I mean, that's someone who could easily, I mean, you say top 20, he's already 20 at this point. I think with a decent year could launch himself into probably where AJ Reed should be ranked, you know, like in the middle of the other block that we were talking about, the Pujols to Zimmerman block, as opposed to, I don't think he would go as high as 10, but I think if he has a year that he's capable of, and I don't know that I have a ton of confidence that that'll happen, but if he has a year he's capable of, I think you could easily put him in the top, you know, right around the 15 range.
Sounds good. Ben, do you have a shorter answer?
No, I also like Bell and also don't really like anyone else in this tier with the possible exception of Vogelbach, so I'll go Bell as well. I don't really think Cron, Alvarez are that good. Carter is a giant question mark. Teixeira is 98 years old and Matt Adams is so-so. So I will also go Bell.
Can I just make one comment on Cron? Because he was just atrocious in the beginning of the season, but he was out from, I don't know if he was sent down or hurt, I don't remember, but he was out from May 24th to June 6th. Since he returned on June 6th, he hit .282, .326, .496 with 15 homers in 82 games, which are 100% playable even in like, what, 12 team leagues, right? I mean,
absolutely. Maybe, those are,
yeah,
those
especially
are like
his first base eligibility, which he might not, but he's probably DH, but it's playable. It might not be ideal at utility, but it's playable.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, yeah, I think of Cron as sort of, I think of Cron as sort of Mark Trumbo-ish in that way. Mm-hmm. I know the power isn't quite the same, but just like, but at the same time, the stats matter.
Yeah, it's never gonna really impress you, but it could really solidify your team. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just, for 10 seconds, I will just say that I am really interested to see what Chris Carter does in Milwaukee. He is moving to a very friendly ballpark. He's moving to the National League. And for someone who has severe contact issues, moving to the slightly easier league might help him out a bit. And I would not be surprised at if he challenged for a 40 homer season in 2016. I mean, he's Chris Carter, so it probably would come with a 220 or 230 average, but he'll get the playing time in Milwaukee, and in that park, really, and anything is possible with him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also don't think he'd be inside your top 20, even if he did that, because the odds of it happening again are pretty slim, right? I mean,
yeah, he'd have to increase his contact rate, really.
Yeah, yep.
But so let's go past this tier. We'll do 15 seconds on Greg Bird as both a valuation and a 2016 postmortem. Ben, do you think this ranking was too low when this came out? Do you think it was fair? Where do you think he would rank right now if we re-ranked based on the landscape after his shoulder surgery?
Yeah, I don't know how much Bird really changes for me. You know, it's a shoulder injury. It's not great for a hitter, but usually whenever we have a player suffer an injury that's just going to knock him out for 1 year, we tend to put him in stasis. You know, we do it more commonly with pitchers than we do with hitters. But overall, unless you're really worried about the shoulder limiting Bird's ability to hit in the future, if that's the case, I could see dropping him to around, you know, Lind and Park because of the increased risk factor. But overall, I'd probably only drop him one spot behind A-Rod because A-Rod will provide value this year and Greg Bird won't. But not a huge value shift in my eyes.
All right. Any different opinion, Craig, or similar opinion?
Yeah, I think similar. I think you could make a case that it pushes him as far back as behind Mitch Moreland or something like that. But, you know, Moreland was really pretty good last year, and I think you can make the case that he should be above Bobby Bradley anyway, and I would make the case that he certainly belongs above Trey Mancini. So,
okay. Let's make these quick hit questions the rest of the way out. Craig, if you were rostering Alex Rodriguez for the rest of his career, how many home runs do you think he would hit for your fantasy team?
Um, 93.
That's a lot of home runs.
Yeah, I have no. How old is he at this point? 41? That's way too many. I love A-Rod. I hope he plays forever.
So do I.
You know what? I'm sticking with it. 93. Make 93. It happen,
A-Rod. Okay.
Well, he just hit 33, right? That's like three more years.
That's true. All right, Ben, more home runs from now until the end of the earth, A-Rod or Byung-ho Park?
Byung-ho Park. I know you hate him, but I don't think A-Rod is going to hit 93 homers, so.
Fair enough.
That's blasphemy.
Craig, Matt Olson or Rowdy Tellez?
Matt Olson, that's not close for me.
Yeah, same.
Okay. Rowdy Tellez or Jake Bowers?
Tellez.
Yeah, I'll take Tellez. I don't like first baseman without power in fantasy.
Fair enough. Justin Bour, will he have a job in June?
Yeah, sure. He was pretty decent last year, right?
Yeah.
So he was not good except in September when he hit 9 home runs.
Who else do they have that could challenge him?
Nobody.
Yeah, he'll have a job.
Yeah.
To the Marlins, who gives a shit?
He had 4 homers in 4 games in July at some point, I'm pretty sure. So there you go.
Yeah, sounds good. Craig, Kenny Vargas.
I love him. What's up? I still love him. He's going to get traded, and he's going to be good, like, once in 4 years, and I will never shut up about it, and I will still be wrong.
Perfect. Ben, do you want to do you want to take a break? You're the host. What am I doing?
I was just waiting for the Anya reference, which really you could have tied that in nicely as you were doing the sort of rapid questions there. Like, you could say something like Logan Morrison or Anya, who's the bigger one-hit wonder. Welcome back to episode 63 of Tino. I hope you used that break to determine some new Anya references of your own. Send them all to Brett, because clearly he needs them. Brett, it's been a while since we discussed one of your Dynasty League positional rankings lists. Is there any position in particular you want to get to next?
Yeah, let's go to second base. Does that sound good to you?
Let's go. Let's just go for it.
All right. Second base is a weird position. Just because it is the names that we've seen at the top and we kind of expected to be at the top aren't really there, and some names that are at the top are not the names that we thought would be. Is Jose Altuve a clear number one at this position for both of you guys?
He is for me. I've been on this bandwagon for a few years now.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy I would take, but I think there's a case for, you know, if you want to heavily weight steals, which isn't an unreasonable thing to do. You know, if you want to put Gordon number one, I could get it, but I would take Altuve because I've always kind of been a more across the board kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Altuve has turned into a pretty safe high end guy at this point, which is still surprising to me. But let's talk about the guy who's at number two on this list, because he's probably the most interesting of the top three given his last two seasons, and that's Anthony Rendon. Craig, what are you expecting out of Rendon this year, and how does that compare to what you think he can produce over the course of the next 4 to 5 years?
I mean, the question for Rendon to me is all about health. He wasn't healthy last year. He obviously didn't play in just about half the season, a little over half the season, games-wise. And I think he probably wasn't fully healthy in a bunch of the games he did play. I would expect, when healthy, that he's very much close to the guy he was in 2014 when he hit 287, 351, 473. I think that's pretty close to his true talent level. You know, he's someone who I can't fathom him only slugging 363 again. And I think part of the reason that everyone was so high on him following 2014 was not only that he finally stayed healthy for a season, but because the talent that he showed and the numbers that he recorded were very much in line with what people thought he was. So again, if healthy, I think it's completely reasonable to expect that kind of slash line. In terms of, you know, just counting numbers, I think that's obviously a little trickier, because he's probably not going to be healthy the entire year. But I think something in the 15 plus home run range, I think he is going to bat at the I hope he's going to bat at the top of the Nationals lineup. I think he can threaten 100 runs, and I don't know. 285 seems right to me.
Hmm. Ben, are you higher or lower on Rendon than that?
No, I think what Craig said is right. I don't think he's going to run as much as he did in 2014.
Yeah, that's
but,
a good point.
Other than that, I think that definitely is his true talent. The only other point I would bring up, in addition to his health, is I'm not convinced he's going to be someone who has second base eligibility in, you know, 2 or 3 years from now. So for those reasons, I would have him third. I'd have him behind Altuve and Gordon, but I still really like Rendon, but I'll take the relatively shorter things.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. The number four is Robinson Cano. We've talked about this, so we won't dwell on Cano very much. But, Ben, when is you've seen what the trade market looks like for Robinson Cano this offseason. How confident are you as a Robinson Cano owner that that there will be a better deal for you in season?
Not very, but that's not the end of the world because I still think Cano is going to be a top five option for the next 3 or 4 years. So hopefully someone really needs a second baseman who is contending and I can try to swing a package. But, I've sort of made my peace that unless someone blows me away, I'm probably stuck with Cano. But there are worse properties to be stuck with in fantasy.
Very true. So at number five on this list, I put Yoel Moncada. I put him ahead of a number of strong second base options that are in the majors right now, and including some guys that are still reasonably young. Ben, you're a resident Red Sox expert. How crazy or defensible is this ranking? He is one of the most exciting fantasy prospects in all of baseball, and maybe the second most exciting next to Byron Buxton. Not to sell Corey Seager short at all, but I think people know what they're expecting out of Seager. And it's not this sort of potential five category thrill ride that that I think Moncada might be capable of.
It's a little crazy. And it's not because I don't love Moncada. I agree with you. I think his upside is absurd, but he is pretty far away, and guys like Dozier and Kipnis and Odor are good now. And if Moncada stays a Red Sox, he's not going to be a second baseman. So I don't really know exactly how to factor that in, because there's always a chance that they trade him, or I suppose even a chance they trade Dustin Pedroia, although that's unlikely. But if Moncada does stay a Red Sox, he'll be a third baseman or a right fielder in all likelihood.
Okay. Craig, do you have any strong opinions on Moncada?
I don't think it's crazy to say that he's more exciting than someone like Seager. I mean, Moncada got off to that slow start, but he was insanely good the second half of the year in Greenville. And I think something that we haven't, or maybe that I haven't appreciated, I shouldn't say we, but I haven't appreciated, was that he stole 49 bases in 52
attempts. It's crazy. Yeah,
that's ridiculous. And some of that is, like lower minors catchers and pitchers and stuff like that. But like that's a potential fantasy monster. Like he's I think he would be, how high would you put him if he was like a 20 stolen base guy, Brett? Like, first of all, like I know you're still in the drafting process or one of the drafts of your 101, but around where is he on the 101?
He is easily top five. I could tell you where he is, but then I'd be playing spoiler. Fuck it. He's number three behind Seager and Buxton.
And that's right to me.
If he was a 20 stolen base guy, would he be out of the top five?
Probably just because of the two guys behind him, but he probably would be six or seven.
Okay. Yeah. He's got
power coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of my point, is that like, the overall skill set is so incredibly exciting. And that's before you get to like the guy who stole 49 out of 52, which is insane. So yeah. I don't mind being aggressive with a talent like that, I guess, is where I land.
I agree with you, and just because I like to torture Ben a little bit, I did go back, and in 2012, it wasn't quite 49 for 52, but Garin Cecchini was what, Ben, in stolen bases?
He stole a shitload of, was it also in Greenville?
53, it was in Greenville,
right?
Yeah.
51 for 57.
Yeah. And I spent 2 years telling everyone he wasn't fast.
Yeah, which he's not. But then, you know, that's a fun thing to throw out at dinner parties if you go to the right kind of dinner parties. But it's just a reminder that, you know, Moncada is not going to be a 70 steal guy major leagues. So, yeah, I think Craig's point is good. I think if you're expecting Moncada to be more than a 30 steal guy, you're probably expecting too much. But I think 30 is pretty reasonable. I think I've seen 60s on his speed from reports. I think, right? Is that what?
Maybe like in his really early years, I do think he's going to fill out and eventually the balance is going to shift toward power. But if you wanted to tell me he'll hit 30 once or twice, like in his first 3 or 4 seasons, I guess I could see that.
Oh, yeah. I'm just talking about when he gets to the majors. I'm not talking about like in 7 years.
Yeah, I think that's aggressive, but not entirely unlikely.
Okay. So let's kind of quick hit our way through this next tier. Craig, Rougned Odor. He's number 6 on this list. For me, he is ranked this high because of his youth and his floor, not because of his upside. So tell me what you think his upside is. Not necessarily for this year, but his peak in terms of batting average, homers and steals. What does it look like?
Okay, so not necessarily in 1 year, but I think he could be like I think he can challenge 300. I think he's that. I think he has that ability. I wouldn't necessarily say that's the probable outcome, but I think at peak he can challenge 300. I think he can get 20 homers. I think he can do that, and I think he could probably steal 15 bases, and runs and RBI I don't think are worth kind of challenging. No. I think those are kind of his. I see those as his peak numbers. I wouldn't expect those all to happen in a given season, and I wouldn't call them, you know, I think he's more likely to come close to his peak than a lot of other guys. Like you're saying, he's got a very high floor. But I think a regular year for Odor is something like 285. His power is so tricky because he's not a big guy, but he does make a ton of good contact. Somewhere between 12 and 18 homers, and then probably closer to like 10 stolen bases. He's a great athlete, but he's not a good base stealer at present.
Yeah, I think I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think he's more likely to be a 300 hitter than he is to be a 20 home run hitter. And yeah, I'm not saying you did not say that. I just want to that yeah. That's just
no. I concur. I concur. Okay. With that. I do think what I would say is so you have Odor, Dozier, and Kipnis in a tier, and you admit that they're tightly packed. I don't think that there's a great case for putting Odor above the two other guys, and especially above Dozier, who you know I think we were reasonably pretty high on after he built on his 18 home run season by hitting 23 home runs in 2014. And then he just went back out and backed it up with a 28 homer season. He didn't run as much, but you know, 28 and 12 from your second baseman is phenomenal value, even with the average issues. And I would be taking Dozier over Odor for the next 3 years, I guess, probably pretty easily, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would take Dozier over Odor for 2016. I mean, the thing that, and yeah, I did put in there that it's extremely close. The one thing that raises a little bit of concern with me with Dozier is that his strikeout rate has been steadily climbing. Yep. And, you know, it's at the point now where he struck out 148 times last year. He had in 2014, he had 89 walks and 129 strikeouts. In 2015, he had 61 walks and 148 strikeouts. And that led to, you know, it led to a slightly lower batting average, which was covered up a little bit, but a much lower on base. I think that, you know, a lot of the value that he had was in his runs scored. He scored 101 runs, but you'd be really hard pressed to score 101 runs again with a sub 310 on base in the Minnesota Twins lineup. So if he's scoring 80 runs, 85 runs instead of over 100, which he's done the past 2 years, then that's a ding on his value, especially if his steals are going to continue to slip down, which I think they probably will.
That's
it. I like Dozier. I just there are hints.
100% agreed.
And there are hints of it not necessarily decline, more inconsistency with Kipnis. But do you guys want to talk about Kipnis? Is that interesting?
I continue to like Jason Kipnis. I think I don't need to say more.
Yeah, I like him too. I don't love him, but I like him.
I agree.
Yeah. So Javi Baez is at number 9. How do you, Ben, what do you think of, would he be in the top 10 for you given his upside and the lack of playing time he's probably looking at this year?
I'm not trying to be boring, but this is maybe exactly where I'd have him. If you really love floor, I could kind of see Wong above him, but I think this is perfect. Yes, obviously the upside, obviously the risk is enormous, but whatever. I mean, we don't really talk about Baez. Everyone knows what Baez is at this point, and I think this is an appropriate way to balance his risk and his upside.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of balancing risk and upside, let's talk about Jerks and Profar for a minute. He has been injured forever and came back and hit pretty well in the AFL considering he hadn't played in forever. Craig, he's 11 on this list. That I'm sure is aggressive compared to what other opinions are. I don't know whether your opinion is that it's aggressive or not, but if it is, tell me where you would be comfortable ranking him.
I don't know. I can't really criticize this, and I don't know that it makes me extremely comfortable, but that's mostly because I think you could rank Profar anywhere from where you have him to, I don't know, behind Howie Kendrick right now and not be that unreasonable. And maybe that's a little far, but we don't know almost anything about where he is. I know he had a nice AFL and that was encouraging him, but we don't really know if he can play the field. If he can't play the field, then where is his value at that point? You know what I mean? Like if he, there's just so much that we don't know, and it's been such a long layoff that I don't have anywhere to criticize because I don't have any point of reference, really.
I'll criticize. This is way too high. Okay. way too high is maybe strong, but there's no way on earth I'm taking her ahead of anyone else in this tier. Kendrick's an interesting anchor point for me, Craig. I agree with you. That's probably the low point, but I'm not taking Profar ahead of guys like Kinsler, Walker, Murphy, and Pedroia, who at least for the next 3 or 4 years are going to be solid second base options. He's always, I think we've always oversold his upside a little bit anyway. Mm-hmm. And I've always viewed him as someone who would be a top 5 second baseman, not a top 1 or 2. And when you take into account the injuries, I think the fact that we're not positive he can even play the field is really overlooked. And we don't know what to expect. So I get it. I get wanting to aim for this in a dynasty league, and it's hard to find stars in Dynasty League, and I get wanting to roll the dice, but I would not be able to bring myself to pick him before those 4, at the very least.
I completely get that. So let's kind of group this. Let's look at the next couple of guys here. Ian Kinsler, Neil Walker, Dan Murphy, and Dustin Pedroia make up this next tier. Are there any of these guys, Craig, that you are particularly concerned about in the short term?
No, not really. I I've never been a Daniel Murphy guy, but he's remarkably consistent, and I don't know that I could say I'm really concerned. I'm just not. It's never been a profile I've loved.
Yeah, I asked that just because these guys are probably a consistent, you know, 8 through 11, probably, or maybe slightly higher for 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these are the kind of guys that it's tempting to say, like, they're always undervalued, guys like Murphy or Walker, because they will always, they'll always get drafted kind of behind where they'll finish. But part of that is because the upside isn't really there. Like, none of them are going to turn into a star season at this point, I don't think. It's pretty unlikely. Right. But they're almost always going to return their value.
Yeah. The upside of these guys is that you don't have to own Scooter Gennett.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's right.
Yeah. So the next tier here has a couple of guys who are favorites of each of yours individually. Craig, talk for 15 seconds about Jonathan Scope and where he is right now and what you think we can see out of him over the next year or two.
I believe, just in my heart of hearts, that one day he will crack a 3% walk rate. Bold. I think he can get there.
Maybe.
Heard it here first.
No, he's 24. He's never going to walk a lot. I do think he can break 3%, which he's yet to do. But he's also been rushed almost his entire career. He was having a great year before he hurt himself. This year, even with the walk rate issues, he had 15 home runs in 86 games. At second base, that's great. I think he can hit for power. I don't think he's ever going to walk, and he's not going to run. So I'm fine with where he is in these rankings. I'd probably take him over Laurie myself, but I don't have a problem with him being where he is. He hit 209 in 2014. He hit 279 in 2015. I don't think he's kind of either of those, but I do think he can hit 250, 260, 20 home runs.
All right. Ben, if we know that Brandon Phillips is currently blocking him, but with Jose Peraza now in Cincinnati, how do you feel about his sort of medium term prospects and in terms of both playing time and in terms of stolen base ability?
Stolen base ability, it doesn't really change with contextual factors that much. I think he still easily has 35-40 steal upside in a full season. I don't know how much he'll play this year just because who's going to trade for Brandon Phillips at this point? I mean, I guess if a contender...
Could he not get run at shortstop? I mean, Suarez is going to be third base. So
that's exactly where I was going. I think people forget that Peraza is a shortstop who moved to accommodate Andrelton Simmons. But there's really every indication that Peraza can play shortstop just fine. And he's probably not going to get a lot of outfield time with Billy Hamilton and whatnot. But there are a few different paths to playing time for Peraza. So even if he only gets, 200 plate appearances this year, but he does register enough time to increase his positional eligibility, that could be good. Medium term, I don't think he's going to make much of an impact in 2016, but there are ways for him to set himself up to be a really valuable either middle infielder or, you know, outfield five or utility player in 2017.
Yeah, my burgeoning favorite thing about the Reds is that in a couple of months, they look to they might be fielding shortstop prospects at like five positions. between Billy Hamilton and Eugenio Suarez and Jose Peraza, they just have a glut of guys who were almost exclusively shortstops throughout the minors and are now playing different positions. But go Reds! When you want to get offense, you got to convert shortstop prospects to other positions.
It's a classic saying.
It is. So the next two guys on my list were guys who I thought I was down on compared to the consensus. Do either of you want to argue in favor of either Joe Panik or Devon Travis as being higher on this list?
No, not really. I don't know. I think you could make a case as for Panik as something like a God, I don't even know. He doesn't strike me as exceedingly different as Howie Kendrick, maybe. He's going to hit for average. It's going to be a little bit of pop. He's not really going to run. I don't know. I think you could say he's kind of, if you want to say a tick below Kendrick at his prime going forward, I think that's pretty reasonable. I think he's someone that's like a bankable, decent average, and everything else is kind of who knows. And if you like that profile, I think you could justify taking him over someone like Scope. But I don't have a problem with where he is either.
Okay. Ben, either one?
No strong feelings.
Cool. So similar question that I asked when we were going over the first base list, but for a slightly worse group of players. This tier from 23 to 30. Craig, pick one player from this list that you think is going to take a healthy jump up this list in 2016.
I'm going to say two names, but I'm going to focus on one. I think Forrest Wall at 28 could be someone to take a big jump up if he plays a healthy season and plays to the abilities that I know that we think he has, or especially that I do, since I've been very high on him since his draft. But Brandon Drury, I think, is the name that he's just, you know, he's right below the major league level, and he plays in a good hitting situation in Arizona if he makes the major league team. Right now you're talking about either Chris Owings, who I still kind of believe in on some level, and Nick Ahmed, who's utter fantasy garbage at second base. And I think Drury could be a guy who could step in and fill that void. And if he can play a passable second base, I think, you know, the offense is there. And he's not going to be a huge home run guy, but average, doubles, runs, I think all of that is at his disposal if he can wrest the starting job in Arizona.
Ben, what about you?
Those are the two guys who stick out to me. I don't really want to make a false case for someone else. I think I like Alan Hansen a little bit more than some other people do. I think eventually he can be a second division starting second baseman, and I think he'll have decent enough counting stats to be interesting in a TDGX size league, but I don't expect him to take a giant jump up the rankings or anything. So I agree with Craig, especially on Drury.
Yeah, I still like Dilson Herrera a lot, but Neil Walker, Brett, you and I both love him. I have always loved him. So, mm-hmm. and I don't think Herrera makes that jump this, you know, going into next year necessarily, because we're not really going to know. He'll have opportunity, assuming Walker moves on as a free agent, but I don't expect to see a ton of Herrera this year.
Yeah, I think 2017 is going to be the year that Herrera jumps, and and that is absolutely fine in the long term anyway, because he'll have just turned 23 on opening day 2017. Yeah, so Herrera, it's easy to forget how young Herrera is, considering that he was in the majors in 2014. But I agree with you. I'm still bullish on Herrera long term. It just doesn't look like it's happening in 2016.
Yeah, and the other name I'll talk about, because really once we get past this tier, there aren't a ton of names to spend time on, is you have Logan Forsyth at 23. He's the guy I wrote an avoid blurb about in our second base week avoid thing. I don't think Logan Forsyth is very good. My case against him is that he established career highs in walk rate, home runs, average on-base slugging, stolen bases, and BABIP. And while all of that happened, his batted ball profile didn't really change in any major way that would make you think that those leaps forward were at all sustainable. And you know, the home runs, he went from 6 to 17. Average, he went from 214 in 2013 and 223 in 2014 to 281. I mean, it was a massive, massive change, and there's nothing really there that I think can support that type of jump. He did cut down his whiff rate. He went from 21 to 18, but I don't think that really explains those types of changes. So, I mean, I guess the question I'd ask you is, you have him at 23 this year. Do you think you'll have him higher or lower next year?
I think next year I will have him slightly higher. I'm not as down on him for 2016 as you are. I think he'll take a step back, but I don't think it will be a huge step back. I think he can be a mixed league starter throughout all of 2016, and you know, I don't think he's going to be a great one, but and when you look at some of the names below him, even some of the names ahead of him, I'm comfortable taking that, the chance that some of this is real.
Okay, yeah, that's faith I don't have, but that's fine.
Mm-hmm. So how you guys want to handle the last 20 players on this list? Most of them suck. Do you want to just take like one guy and talk about someone you find interesting on the back 20 here?
You could do lightning round again. I thought that went well for first base.
All right, let's do lightning round. Craig, how many at bats do you think Enrique Hernandez gets in 2016?
280.
Okay.
So just for what it's worth, Friedman said he thinks that there's going to be 1,300 to 1,400 at bats for Kendrick, Utley, and Hernandez. But I'd probably put Hernandez on the short end of those guys, relative to the other two guys.
Okay. Ben, are you ready to call it a day on Arismendi Alcantara, or do you still think he can probably take a different organization, but do you still think there is some sort of power speed potential here with him?
I would be fine rostering or not. Yeah, I'd be fine with him like a TDGX size league, but anything much shallower than that, I'll just wait until he has some sort of chance.
Okay. Craig, where do you think... When Willie Calhoun makes his major league debut, what position do you think he plays?
A bad left field.
Really? Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how many games do you think it will take for Danny Espinosa to lose the starting shortstop job in Washington this year?
42.
All right. Craig, how many home runs will Aaron Hill hit in 2016 in Milwaukee?
Our guy.
13. All right. Is that more home runs than Travis DeMeritt will hit in the minors this year?
Are you're asking me still?
Yes.
No, I think it's less. I think DeMeritt will hit home runs. I don't know. I think he'll strike out a lot more. Mm-hmm. I think he might have over a 26% strikeout rate while he does it, but.
Yeah. Ben, would you drop Brock Holt off this list because he got a haircut?
Well, ooh. I would have had him much higher to begin with, but maybe this is like post-haircut, this is a fair ranking. With the haircut, I would have had him right behind Nick Franklin, but now I understand.
So, can I ask a question about someone that you bypassed?
Yep.
So far, Josh Harrison seems very negative. I don't know that I would have him higher, but I'm just curious as to kind of what it is that played into this. Like, behind Scooter Gennett seems just like it seems like a little bit of a personal insult.
Well, this was behind Scooter Gennett pre Aaron Hill trade. So where Gennett was going to be the guy playing second base because they had
I don't care. It still seems even with full playing time, it seems mean.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't think Harrison really does anything. He hit 287 last year, which was fine. I think about 280 is what you can expect from him, but he's got really very minimal power. He's not good at stealing bases.
But he steals them.
Well, he was 10 for 18 in 2015.
Right. No, I'm not arguing that he's good, but he steals them.
Steal 10 bases again, but
yeah.
It's fair. It's a low ranking, but you know, for the guys in 2016, I mean, I'd rather have Corey Spangenberg and Brandon Phillips for 2016 than Josh Harrison, would you?
Spangenberg, I think there's a case just on average, and he's a good stolen base threat this year. Mm-hmm. I think Harrison and Phillips is a little bit of a toss up to me. But I guess I'd probably say Phillips because Phillips hit 290 last year. It's not like he can't hit. He's bad because he has a bad contract and he never walks or whatever, but he's fine in fantasy.
Yeah.
But I'd probably have him closer to Phillips than you do, I guess.
Yeah, this is more just having a number of these prospects between where those guys are and where Josh Harrison is.
That's fair.
Yeah. The one guy who I want to point out on this list who we didn't talk about for 10 seconds is Jace Peterson, who's at 38. But there's been news that's come out the last week or so that he did play, I think, the majority of the 2015 season with a torn ligament in his thumb. And he was a better prospect than he showed in 2015. He's a guy with speed. I mean, he stole 12 bases in 152 games last year, and he hit 239. But I think there's more offensive upside than he showed. And if he was hurt last year and is healthy now, he's someone who I could see jump up towards where, like, Corey Spangenberg and maybe where is, and maybe even a touch higher if he fulfills a lot of that promise. He's someone not to forget about. That's all I got. Ben, I'm going to hand you back the keys so you can make an Enya reference.
Oh, really? I thought we were going to give this another shot this time, Brett, after your pretty disappointing Enya effort the first time around.
Yeah, I figured all right, it's
fine. Where would Chris Davis rank on a list of Enya's best songs? Welcome back to episode 63 of Tino. As always, let's send out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review us on iTunes. You guys have been great about doing so recently, and it's really, really helped our street cred, I would say. So if you enjoy the podcast, please let us know. And if you don't, please email flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. The BP Annual is out, and it is the number one baseball book on Amazon.com. Reviews so far include things like, wow, the print is bigger, this is a very heavy book, and the jokes are less bad, so definitely go out and buy that. Our positional series is still going strong at BP. We have Dynasty League rankings, three-year rankings for just 2016, get-to-know prospects, and our organizational top 10 series is continuing as well. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Tino Podcast or email us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find Brett on Twitter at The Dynasty Guru. Just kidding, at Dynasty Guru. And you can find Craig at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in can't decide Goldstein. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
through two positions. Let's go home.
That's what she said.
It's really just set up way too well for that.
Yeah.